Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. It has never happened before in the modern history of the Supreme Court. A draft of a court decision leaked to a news organization and now very public before the court takes a vote. This draft on the issue of abortion suggests that the landmark 1973 Roe v. Wade decision could be overturned. Chief Justice John Roberts saying today the draft is authentic but not a final decision of the court. Tonight, we look at what this means for the independence of the court, abortion rights, even election year politics. My guests are Monique Pressley, attorney and host of Make It Make Sense with Monique Pressley, and Mary C. Curtis, columnist with Roll Call. Lines are open. Want to hear what you think about this explosive news coming out of the U.S. Supreme Court today. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Monique, Mary, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Thank you for Great having me.
Mary, let me start with you. What is the most surprising? The leak, what the draft says, or even that there is a draft for such a huge issue coming out of the court?
Well, while the leak may be a surprise and it is unprecedented, I would say that what it says shouldn't be. Let's face it, Donald Trump said he would only appoint justices who are opposed and wanted to overturn Roe v. Wade. So many people did not take that seriously. They should have. And so we have these justices who are willing to overturn a precedent, even though many said at their hearings that Roe v. Wade was established precedent and they would not. And also it's interesting because you have with the justices appointed by George W. Bush in his first term and Donald Trump, that these are justices appointed by presidents that did not receive the popular vote. And every poll has shown that Americans are in favor of keeping abortion safe and legal. So I would say that no, what it said is not a surprise. Now, we can talk about the political implications later, but I would love to hear the lawyer's take on it.
Yeah, how about that, Monique? This kind of leak, you know, Congress leaky as a colander, the White House leaky as a sieve, but the U.S. Supreme Court, not just watertight, but airtight when it comes to leaks until last night.
Yes, and I mean, that's the least of the horrible, never-seen-before changes that we are experiencing, that all started some 5.5 years ago with the presidency of Donald J. Trump. And I don't know, you know, we've had some odd, I would dare say illegal, I think I said it on your show the very last time I was on here, confirmation hearings. We've had spots to be held for later terms of office. There have been all kinds of things to happen. And this is where we are now. We get what we get when all societal norms, legal norms, political norms have been put by the wayside, just thrown in a trash receptacle, and we really cannot tell what is going to come next.
Mm-hmm. I said Monica, forgive me. I meant Monique. Monique, one of the things that I find, you know, truly, you know, fascinating, and obviously I am not really familiar with the inner workings of the U.S. Supreme Court, but is this unusual to have a draft of a decision written long before the expected decision is to be handed down? Chief Justice Roberts said, yes, this is authentic, this is a draft, but it is not final. If that is not final, then why write a draft?
Well, because they used the drafts in order to make an ultimate opinion. Oftentimes, the drafts are written, then circulated, and changed. people fight for lines and language, because an utterance by the Supreme Court through its opinions, same as Roe v. Wade, same as Casey, the other cases we're talking about, become, supposedly, the law of the land. And people spend years interpreting commas, ofs, ats, in order to ensure that they have the true intention and meaning of the courts. So it's standard that after a case has been heard, they figure out who's going to be voting for or against. And they did that here. And it looks like that there were five who were deciding that this would be the case where they overrule in total, not distinguish, but completely overrule Roe and Casey. And all of those protections that we have had for 50 years because of those cases. But yes, whoever's going to end up being the drafter would write a draft. The language would be circulated. People would decide if they still want to be on board with it or not. If there are particular paragraphs that they believe maybe are not necessary, or that the language should be softened and still get to the same result. The draft that we are seeing is stringent. It's getting to the point and exceeding the point in many ways. So yes, that does happen. And then at some point before this term ends, and the term ends what, last week of June, first week of July, the decision would be out. So they were following normal course until the leak came.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the leaked draft from the U.S. Supreme Court that suggests that the landmark 1973 decision on abortion, making abortion legal across the United States, Roe v. Wade, could be overturned. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. D, calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, D. What's on your mind?
Hi. Actually, this is an important discussion. Thank you. This draft is written like you're shooting fish in a barrel, as far as I'm concerned. This is not like it could be overturned. It is overturned, in my opinion. I mean, like, I don't care if it's a draft. This is going to be the law. And so now we have to vote. I think that the release was done purposefully, and I'm grateful for it. And I think this is a warning for us, because this is right before the first election starts. And this is really going to be a fight, because we've already had the GOP come in. They're redistricting. They've been winning in the courts. They've been stacking with the courts with conservative judges. And it's going to be an uphill battle. And so we have to look at this as a way. I'm grateful. I'm looking at this as like them throwing something like a bomb in the middle of like a field and saying, okay, you guys are either going to have to run or you're just going to have to let yourself get blown up. I'm kind of upset with Obama, because I just want to say I'm upset because he let the Senate overrun him when he had the right to have his Supreme Court justice picked. I'm really upset with Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I understand, you know, she was dying, but she just didn't step down, and she should have stepped down, and people should have had her step down. We wouldn't be in a situation if people weren't trying to be like polite and stepping back and you know, just letting the GOP overrun what is going to be our union and the Constitution.
Dee, thank you so much. Mary?
Yeah, well, the caller has a point in the sense that if you look at the court, and by stonewalling led by Mitch McConnell on the Merrick Garland decision appointment, and then you see that even though Mitch McConnell had said we were in the middle of an election, we saw when Ruth Bader Ginsburg died, while people were already voting in 2020, that they rushed Amy Coney Barrett on the court. For Republicans, this has been a long-term project to put conservative justices on the court and lower courts, because we've seen that, as the caller said, the stacking of the court. And it has not been as animating an issue for Democrats. And you see, even people who say they supported Roe when they said, do you think the court will overturn it? Most people said, oh, they'll never do that. And you also have these justices promising during their questioning, oh, it's settled law, I won't do that. Well, of course, they weren't telling the truth. And Susan Collins, now Senator of Maine, is saying, oh, I'm very upset. Well, and so it has been a long-term project. So, yes, as the caller said, this will be an animating issue in the midterms, one hopes, and a reminder that voting matters. We'll see. We'll see which base it energizes more. Republicans had been more energized, but will it energize those young voters, women, suburban women, the other folks who thought, well, maybe it didn't matter, or the main issue is going to be inflation and immigration and crime? Yes, those will be issues, but this is truly about a right, and it's not going to be the end of abortion. That's the thing. We'll have it in some states, but in other states, women, where it is illegal, and it will be with these trigger laws, as your other guests have noted, women of means will be able to go wherever they need to go and do whatever they need to do. It will be poor people. It will be people who don't have the means to travel, the time, and all of that. They can't get off their jobs. You will see a return to maybe pre-Roe when there were people died of this. They died from this.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about the leak of a draft from the U.S. Supreme Court that suggests that Roe v. Wade could be overturned in a matter of a few months. Let's go to Greg, calling from Baltimore. Greg, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, what I'm going to say is not popular, but I'm going to go ahead and say it. You know, abortion is not a Republican issue. It's not a Democratic issue. It's a moral issue. And I'm a staunch pro-lifer. And I do at the same time understand a woman should have rights. But I'm sorry, I find value, so much value in life that I feel that, you know, if Roe versus Wade is overturned, so be it. You know, and I'm sorry it's not going to be popular with your guests, but that's how I feel. And I do feel that maybe Roe versus Wade should be modified but not codified. So that's all I got to say on it.
Okay, Greg. Monique, your thoughts about what Greg just shared?
Well, I mean, it's always interesting, especially from the men.
I'm just messing with you. Go right ahead, please.
That it's a moral issue. I agree that it's a moral issue. So, so by all means, let's keep the government out of it. Let's keep men who don't have to carry babies, who cannot conceive babies, and who don't die from conception. Let's keep them out of it. Men who can't, through rape, end up pregnant and have to make painful decisions about what should be done with their own bodies, or let us have similar authority in the government over the bodies of men. Let us, you know, discern that after a certain number of children outside of wedlock and after not paying child support, that there should be forced procedures so that men can no longer have children. What about that for an idea? Or perhaps let's tie the man to the woman who he impregnates for the history, the legacy of the pregnancy, for the life after the pregnancy, to ensure that the child that she was forced to have has two parents, since it's a moral issue. These are all options on the table that really could become real if it weren't for the case that the men who are making these decisions are misogynists. So there will be no controls on the body of the man. There will be no government directives about what a man cannot do with his body or can do with his body. It's all directed toward women. And any person who doesn't see the problem with that, I think they should check. They should check their morality, moral compass on things.
You know, Mary, I must say that Monique really laid that out, you know, very well. And coming from a man, you know, I agree that I don't really see any decisions as important as this that affect men the way it affects women, whether you support abortion or not, if it's not your issue or if it's not something you want to do, okay, then don't you do it.
Yeah. I would like to say to the caller, I am Catholic. I believe life begins at conception. We do not live in a theocracy, so I cannot make decisions for what other women should do, just like Monique made many great points. And so, as she pointed out, you have now these laws in some states with no exception. So a 10-year-old that is raped should be forced to carry that child to term. What about her health, physical and mental? These, as you say, are men making these decisions that are crushing decisions that are made very thoughtfully by women, for the most part. You have some of these states where rapists will be able to sue for custody of these children. Can you imagine?
Oh, my God.
If you take this to its logical end. And in the decision, the draft decision, I am not a lawyer, but some of Justice Alito's language is pretty much saying he's not really in agreement with many rights in the latter part of the 20th century, which are some very crucial rights that have been put forth from same-sex marriage, which I believe he voted against.
So, Mary, hold your point. Yeah. I'm going to let you finish, but I've got to take a break. Bill calling from D.C., Teresa calling from Virginia. We're going to talk to you as well. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Stay with us. We're going to continue this conversation about this leaked draft that suggests that Roe v. Wade could be overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court. I'm Harold Fisher, Don Mons, next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are looking at the leak of a Supreme Court draft decision, what it means for the independence of the court, abortion rights, even election politics. My guests are Monique Presley, attorney and host of Make It Make Sense with Monique Presley, and Mary C. Curtis, columnist with Roll Call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at H. Fisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Mary, please go ahead, finish your point.
Oh, no, I was just saying that in the draft, and it is just a draft, as you pointed out, that Justice Alito, while he says that this is a different right because he says it involves a life, at the same time, he does rail against quite a few rights that weren't in the Constitution that have become put forth in the second half of the 20th century, many which affect people of color. And so as I read it, I think that there are other things. You see folks on the anti-abortion movement talk about some methods of birth control being actually forms of abortion. So will they come after that next? This is, as I was saying before, if this wasn't a driving factor in the elections, I think that it will be to energize both bases.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Bill, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. How are you doing, Harold?
I'm fine. Go right ahead.
Good. Yeah, I had a question. When the country was founded, African Americans were considered 3/5 of a human being, and that stood for 100 years. And everybody cheered when it was changed, and I cheer as well because it was a long time coming. And everybody's saying, well, this law has been around for 50 years and it should not be changed. And there are, like Dred Scott, there are some decisions that with new technology and new open dialogue deserve to be changed. And for 100 years, no one talked about the poor and defenseless African Americans. And then once the dialogue started, then things started to change. Now, What I don't see is anybody talking about the poor and defenseless children. And at 15 weeks, they have a different blood type than their mother, a different heartbeat. And nobody has two heartbeats and survives. So it's got to be a human being. Because no woman or man can live with two different blood types. Or two heartbeats, for that matter.
So let me help form this, and then I'll have, you know, both Monique and Mary talk about this. I mean, Monique, what he is talking about is the fluidity, the flexibility of the U.S. Constitution, and he does make a point. There are, as a black person, yes, I do agree that we need not be considered 3/5 of a person. Yes, we can talk about Brown versus Board and all of the other issues. And so, you know, Monique, what he's saying is how you feel about this depends on how you feel about it.
Right. And I think that there is a difference between what the law requires, what the Constitution says, and what is a point of moral conscience. To become not a 3/5 person, the law had to be changed. It wasn't a matter that was set for the court and then the court made a different decision. The Constitution of the United States had to be corrected. And it may come to that for this issue, except for we can't necessarily count on those in power to honor the rights of women. I saw someone on Twitter today saying, I don't really trust the Constitution. It took two amendments just for me to be a whole person. And that was a black woman who was saying that. To the issue of what life is, respectfully, the 15-week fetus cannot survive absent the woman. So what you're really talking about is a woman who is the victim of incest or rape, who could be 15 years old, who will be forced to take the risks that abound in pregnancy and carry a baby to term that would not, at the age that the caller spoke of, be able to survive on its own. So even though the fetus may have separate biological traits, characteristics at that point, it is not the same as murder, where a person is a freestanding living being separate and apart from another and is intentionally killed, the life taken from them through the actions of another free-willed, freestanding, free-breathing human being. And all of this, I say nothing about my personal position on abortion, because I believe that it truly is a decision that should be made between a woman and her God, and to the extent that she invites a partner into the conversation, a woman, her God, and her partner. And so I think that we really have to look at the way that this country thinks about these things and understand that no matter whether it's the courts or whether it is through law that Congress has to take action, it is still going to be actions through a majority of people, older, white, male people, who are going to be making decisions about matters that they will never, have never, and will never personally experience.
Bill, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Before I go back to the phone lines, Mary, did you want to comment?
Yes, briefly. For so many politicians that talk about freedom and privacy and the government not intruding in your business, this is just so hypocritical, because as Monique pointed out, this is a decision the woman, the doctor, the faith, whatever you want to bring into it. And it was decided on privacy issues. Do we want the government to intrude in these? We saw in Texas already someone, well, they dropped the charges, but charged, it seemed like maybe because she tried to self-abort. Are we going to, we've seen other people have miscarriages and those be questioned. Do we want that? Women arrested, choices made for other folks. And imagine that world post-Roe, once Roe is struck down, if it is overturned. This is what we're going to be seeing. Is this what we want? And also so many of these, another part of the hypocrisy is people who want the kids they want the kids to be born, but will not have any kind of services for the mother, for the children afterwards, for their education, for employment and medical leave and child care and all of these things to support these women and the children. There's no appetite for that. So it makes me really question the concern that they profess to have.
Teresa, calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, Teresa. What's on your mind?
Good evening. I have a totally different take. This is not about Roe Wade. I have called you. I talked with you had some guests on young people back in April of 2019. And young people, they feel like they have to be inspired to vote for a president, or they have to be inspired to vote. This is about voting. Hopefully, this will do a reset for people who are independent thinkers, who are left or center left, like I'm center left, who will think about how the Republicans, this has been a long game, and now the Democrats and people who are left leaning need to do a reset. You've got to play this long game. Mitch McConnell's been at this thing for 40 years. It's about the courts for me. It's about the judicial, because it's not about just Roe Wade. This is about everything, the air that you breathe, how you're policed. And so when young people say they need to be inspired, I pray to God that this inspires them, because every other right will be taken away. It's not about Roe Wade. It's everything that we do. That's all I have to say. And you guys have a wonderful evening.
Teresa, thank you so much. So, Monique, that brings me to the next issue, and I think Mary shared her thoughts about it early. The leak itself, the hand grenade that has been thrown on the political battlefield, what do you think was the purpose of the leak? Do you, I want you to look into your legal crystal ball. Was this someone who is trying to shift the prospect of Democrats losing the House this fall? Or was this someone who hopes that if that were to happen, that the Republicans would have an even stronger hold on that? What do you think the purpose of this was?
Right. Well, I mean, I wouldn't be able to look at anything legal. I would have to grab my crystal ball. and I am more inclined to believe those who are speculating and opining that this was conservative machinations, not liberal, because us knowing about it really does lock in votes. It makes it much less likely that any of the five will publicly change and be a part of whatever it is that Roberts is going to write, or certainly go over to the other three. So it makes the votes and the voters entrenched. It gives kind of cover with the whole leak story being part of the narrative. And of course, Roberts calls for an investigation. McConnell says it's a travesty and calls for an investigation. We're talking about it. I understand it's new, so I understand that no dispersions on you, Harold, for talking about it. But that was part of the point, too, because instead of just this decision coming out, we've got a balanced time between the horror of the opinion itself and the story the scintillation of the story about the leak. And I don't know really, other than more anger and fury, what is gained on the left side, because it was surely coming out before midterms. I mean, so whoever was going to run to the polls, whoever was going to do their early voting, that all still was a possibility. Maybe we galvanize more. But on that note, and I just want to say, I haven't had a chance to say it yet, I agree with every single thing that my partner in commentary tonight has said. Mary has all the other points, and I appreciate it. And one of the things that she talked about was how this affects the poor, this affects minorities, this affects those who don't have all these options. And that brought me in my head to what I've said out loud three times already today. That 53% that voted for Trump, nothing changes for them.
Mm-hmm.
My white women sisters, the ones who went out and voted like that, yes, some voted against their own interests, but some were voting for their husband's interests, some were voting for their family's interests, some were voting for the patriarchy because it serves their interests. They will be able to cross state lines. They will be able to have private doctors. They'll be able to leave the country and get a safe abortion. This affects the same women who are also, don't you know it, more likely to die in childbirth. We just had Black Maternal Health Week 3 weeks ago, and on my show, I talked to the head of the NMA, Dr. Rachel Villanueva, and she talked about how, you know, Black women are three times more likely to die in childbirth. We're higher disproportionate percentage for long-term care necessary after childbirth. She said in New York, it's 6 out of 10, six times more likely. So they're going to force us to do something that we have a higher risk of dying or having long-term illness doing. And then, as Mary just said, then they're going to call us welfare moms. They're not going to take care of these babies that they forced us to have. So the fix is in. And it is hideous, and I do hope we vote. To your caller's point, yes, it's not just Roe v. Wade. It is Roe v. Wade because it matters, but it is not just Roe. Brown v. Board is in the same boat, and all of the other rights that we thought were not going to be discussed anymore, those are all on the table.
Yeah. Mary, this, if it is struck down, if Roe is struck down, it means that this would now go back to a decision that individual states make. And, you know, the reporting is that it is a reflection of the political climate. Half of the states, a little more than half of the states, are likely to ban abortion if Roe is struck down. What does that say to you? I mean, it's almost, oh my goodness, when I think about it, it's like Civil War, states' rights, and is it 1861 again?
Well, definitely states' rights, and we have seen many states have already lined up bills that ban or practically ban abortion, so that if the Supreme Court does, it was in preparation for that. They saw that the 6-3 court was one that was very friendly to them, and that they're ready to go, and there will be trigger laws. We saw Texas's law, and so many were going to Oklahoma, and now Oklahoma has a law that almost bans abortion totally. So, yes, it is going to be that. And you know, that's why these coming elections aren't just important in the states. You have, you know, statewide elections, governors in swings in states like Pennsylvania and Wisconsin and Michigan. And, you know, I right now, in my home base is Charlotte, North Carolina. In North Carolina, you have a Democratic governor that has vetoed some bills that have come through. But if the Republican majority in the state legislature gets a supermajority, well, they can override that veto. And then it matters in the federal level because, you know, if Republicans do take over the House and Senate, perhaps they want a federal law banning abortion. And for people who say they wouldn't do that, well, how many people said they wouldn't overturn Roe? So, yes, coming up, these things are extremely important on every level. And I think it's incumbent on all the voters and all the citizens to ask every politician where he or she or they stand.
Yeah. Monique, let's talk about the D.C. piece for a minute. D.C. Delegate Eleanor Holmes Norton, along with D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser and the lion's share of the D.C. Council, speaking up about this issue today. Yes, the mayor talked about women's health care, couching it in a more general term, as did D.C. Delegate Eleanor Holmes Norton. But they also talked about, outside of the abortion health issue, that this is a slippery slope, just, you know, for the District of Columbia. No voting rights, no voting representative in Congress. And with, you know, Congress continuing to, as they would describe, interfere with how D.C. does its business, do you see this as today just an extension of the District of Columbia being handicapped, being impotent in its ability to make its own decisions?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't believe there is another way that it can be seen. And again, we hate being a broken record about these things, but there's simply no doubt in my mind that if the District of Columbia wasn't going to turn into a liberal-leaning, two Senate votes and however many reps, maybe one, maybe two, depends, that it would have been granted rights some way, shape, or form a long time ago, even if it wasn't through statehood. This would have been figured out. I mean, taxation without representation was supposedly one of the things this country was against from the inception. I mean, birth 30 was what we were about, but not for the residents of the District of Columbia who are citizens of these United States. And this is going to be yet another example of ways in which we remain disenfranchised. It's not disenfranchisement because it's been perpetual disenfranchisement, and to call it a territory and to be responsible to pay taxes and to have to abide by the laws of the federal government and to be left unable to make the laws of a state when it's time to make a state law about a critically important issue like this, like what a woman can do with her body, it just highlights the injustice, the complete injustice of the status of things for D.C.
Mary, your thoughts about what this means for the district?
Yeah, I really totally agree. I'm so in my mouth with Monique because you saw this court weaken the Voting Rights Act, and then all of the states enacted, or many, many states enacted laws restricting voting. Okay, so, you know, now we have important elections coming up, but will everyone have a voice? So it makes sense that one follows the other, whether it's, you know, the D.C. statehood, yes, and now all of these laws restricting voting, because it will be much easier for a minority to entrench rules and regulations and laws governing folks' bodies over the majority. And I think that, you know, as the last caller said, this has been sort of the plan all along. And I think D.C. statehood is a piece of that. And you hear it even in the language of the arguments about it. It's not a real state. It doesn't have real industries. It has real citizens, and it's bigger than states like, it has more people than Wyoming. But what's the difference? What's the difference in this picture? Okay. It's really pretty easy to see what some senators consider real, the real United States, a real state, and Washington, D.C.
What do you think, Mary, could be the immediate consequences of Roe being overturned? Could we see border states, one state that, you know, that has full abortion rights bordered next to a state that has completely banned it? Are we going to see women's clinics now sitting, welcome to Maryland, and your women's health clinic is right off of exit 2? when you cross in from wherever. Could we begin to see that kind of movement?
Well, you've already seen it somewhat with the sanctuary states, and I heard a women's clinic director in one of the states where it was becoming more and more difficult saying that her organization is going to open up a clinic in New Mexico because it is more open, and you will see that. But at the same time, the next step, the state of Missouri is trying to have a law that says that if you get pregnant in Missouri and go to another state, that it still will be illegal for you to get an abortion, which is the next step, right? So they're trying to get sovereignty over other states. And that's why I say there are plans afoot. So, yes, you'll see some states touting the fact that they are more free and have looser laws and folks are welcome. I've also heard something floated. I saw something on Twitter that said the president should say he's going to send doctors to federal lands in other states, in red states, to perform abortions. You are going to be seeing so many things floated now because you already see people in the states. And I think the initial thing is, even though they don't have the votes or to overcome the filibuster, they are going to, Chuck Schumer said, Senate Majority Leader, a Democrat, introduce a law to try to codify Roe, because even if it won't pass, it will basically force every senator to take a stand.
Yeah, but so two things. First of all, in the Missouri example, how do you even enforce that? That sounds ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that probably has no chance. But the same thing is, you can see the thinking.
Yeah.
Where folks are saying, yeah, you know, you're going to have a border state, you're going to have a sanctuary state. Well, we'll do this. We're going to try to do this, and it probably wouldn't pass muster. But like I said, yeah.
Yeah.
Many people said that Roe wouldn't be overturned.
Yeah. Would he have, you know, state senators or, you know, state House members sitting in your bedroom trying to figure out when you got pregnant, you know, which is just ridiculous. But
they're kind of doing that now with all these fetal heartbeat details, though. Yeah.
But on the point of codifying Roe, and as you said, there aren't the votes right now to do that, but forcing senators to make a stand and to have their thoughts be very, very public, that doesn't sound to me like it's really that much of a big deal. I would argue that most of our federally elected officials, members of the House as well as the Senate, you know where they stand on this issue. So what politically, what difference would that make where they would have to reaffirm their position?
Well, you know where they stand, but you know, remember for years that Republicans ran on overturning the Affordable Care Act, and then it got more and more popular.
Mm.
This is like they caught the car. For years it was, we're going to overturn Roe, we're going to overturn Roe, and it didn't actually happen. Now it has. It's a reality.
Mm-hmm.
So something is different when you're, you know, promising this, and then it's happened. So, you know, a lot, it's up to the voters. You know, it is energizing. I've gotten, of course, a slew of emails and releases from both sides, the Planned Parenthood, the Susan B. Anthony, which is very happy that this law Roe could be overturned. So a lot of it will be who is energized, and it will force voters to really think about what kind of country they want to be in. Do they want to live in a world and a country where Roe is no more?
Hmm. Real quick, from an inside baseball thing, Politico, not in trouble, who cares? They're being journalists, that's what they do?
Yeah, they have great sources. I'll give them
How about that?
That? And you see that Democrats seem to be less concerned about the leak than about the content, and Republicans really don't want to talk about the content at all, but just about the leak.
Yeah.
That said, it is unprecedented, and, you know, polls have shown that the Supreme Court is losing its legitimacy in many ways. Many Americans now think it's just another political partisan body, and we'll just continue that.
Yeah, some people care more about or care less about the First Amendment, which I think is, you know, ironic. You know, Monique, I'll let you have the last word about this.
Oh, wow. Last word. Pray, y'all. I mean, pray, really. Do all you can. Vote. Support organizations like Black Voters Matter Fund, Black Voters MTR on Twitter. Follow them. Support them. They are out every day galvanizing, registering voters. Support organizations like Supermajority. Cecile Richards, formerly head of Planned Parenthood, now runs Supermajority. They're sending us emails trying to get everybody to not go completely crazy, but she is the daughter of former Governor Ann Richards from my great state of Texas back when Texas made sense, and you can trust her. There are so many other organizations. Get busy, everyone. Get busy and work, because no matter how long we want to scream about this, what we have to do is work to change it, and I'm on board. So, you know, shout me down, guys, whatever you need. If there's a way that I can help you and your territory, your state, your city, wherever you are, I'll be glad to try.
Monique Presley, Mary C. Curtis, thank you both for talking to us. I always appreciate your input and your intellect.
Thank you.
Sure.
That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, May 3rd. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.